Welcome to the Layer Cake, son.
Welcome to the Layer Cake, son.
Welcome to the Layer Cake, son. What is a fucking layer cake, mate? What are you talking about, mate?
Don't ask me. I go and ask Professor McGonagall. Or maybe Professor Snape will know what a layer cake is. I don't know. But I'm Dumbledore. Did you get that? I'm Dumbledore.
Is that what you understand that? You're going Michael Caine. You've gone Michael Caine. He had a cake the size of a tangerine, Master Bruce.
You're only supposed to fly the bloody hippogriff, you know, that sort of thing. That's what you're looking for. Yeah,
let's get it all out of the system because these impressions are not good enough.
Go find a niffler and he'll get you some gold. There's one thing you need when you're going on a bank heist. It's a bloody niffler. Niffler, of course, a magical beast that likes gold.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host, and Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost. The ghost.
Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond. And joining me as ever, it's the old leaky bucket brain slag, Mr. Joe Devine.
The leaky bucket brain slag.
Yeah? Why are you a leaky bucket brain slag today, Joe?
Well, because I always forget everything that happens in the film Layer Cake, but I can't ever get enough of it.
That's right. We are doing the... Let's just go straight into it. Never mind what we do is this podcast. You know what this podcast is. We talk about the movies you forgot.
Yeah.
And today we are doing the 2004 Brit gangster flick directed by Matthew Vaughn, Layer Cake. This film is all over Netflix at the mo. It stars Daniel Craig. It's based on the book by J.J. Connolly.
Here we go.
It's based on the book of the same name. It's based on the book by J.J. Connolly. It's based on the book of the same name.
No.
It's based on the book by J.J. Connolly of the same name.
That's right.
It's not called J.J. Connolly. It's called...
Well done.
Layer Cake.
That's right. It is called Layer Cake.
Runtime, 105 mins. Felt a bit long.
Yeah.
But do you know what? I watched this, it feels like a week ago. I've already forgotten it.
Yeah.
And I don't know how annoyed I was about the runtime. When a seemingly straightforward drug deal goes awry... The character of Daniel Craig is referred to as XXXX.
Quadruple X.
Quadruple X has to break his diehard rules and turn up the heat, not only to outwit the old regime and come out on top, but to save his own skin. It's basically it's about a drug dealer played by Daniel Craig.
Can I tell you what I think it should be?
Oh, go on then, yeah.
I think the IMDb, the letterbox, should read like this, yeah? Daniel Craig, who will later become James Bond, is a sexy young guy in the 2000s. He's a drug dealer, but he wants to get out because he's smart and the audience need to like him. And guess what? His retirement plans go awry because of some meddlesome people and Michael and Dumbledore. You think you're watching a film that's made by Guy Ritchie.
No, but it isn't take it made back. By Guy Ritchie. Take it back. You don't think you watch. You might think that.
I do. I think normal people who don't know intimately film or intimately understand what Guy Ritchie is watch that and think it could be a Guy Ritchie film. I don't think that. I'm not saying that as a criticism, but like it's very much in the world of Guy Ritchie.
It's a criticism of people watching the film because this film bears no relation to anything. Aside from it being produced by Matthew Vaughn, it's been directed by Matthew Vaughn, who produced Guy Ritchie films.
Yeah.
The content of the film, the way it's shot, the tone of it, is not anything, anywhere close. Let me finish. It's not anywhere close to the wit, the visual panache, the fun of a Guy Ritchie film. The fact that you're saying someone might think, oh, is this a Guy Ritchie film? That means they don't know what they're talking about. They're using Guy Ritchie
exactly
as a placeholder. You know, you didn't say that.
I did say that. I said it's not a criticism of the film, but I think you can understand that people who don't know and aren't intimately involved with Guy Ritchie films.
But I don't understand that kind of mindset.
Well, just because it's a film about, like, you know, it's a film about British gangsters, and there are lots of like cross stories that cross over, and it's a bit like nebulous, and there's a twist always a coming, and that's like watching a Guy Ritchie film.
No, it's not, because there aren't it's not the plot. It's not tightly plotted like a Guy Ritchie film.
I'm not saying it's as good.
You may as well just
are
say
you
like,
being
oh,
deliberately obtuse. We're in the bit of this section where we're telling people who maybe haven't seen the film what it is. And like, I think it's deliberately obtuse to balk at the idea that someone might think this was like a Guy Ritchie film.
You say someone, this someone that you're introducing into my world, I don't like them and I don't want them anywhere near me.
Fuck's sake. It's me. Man, when I watch this movie, I watch that and I think, I didn't know who Matthew Vaughn was before you told me. We had a conversation about a week and a half ago where I said, I thought this was directed by Guy Ritchie. Who's Matthew Vaughn? So really, your hatred is and should be directed at me. Now you have permission to explain that further.
It was supposed to be directed by Guy Ritchie. And the only reason Matthew Vaughn directed it is because Guy Ritchie said, no, I don't want to do this. And Matthew Vaughn had spent so much time developing it as a producer that he was like, oh, why don't I direct this guy? I think I could take it from here. And then set himself up for set himself up to be a director off the back of this.
I mean, a fairly successful one, you could argue.
Very successful. I mean, this guy has got a couple of franchises under his belt. He directed an X-Man movie.
Uh-huh.
That's not nothing.
That ain't nothing.
He was...
Kick-Ass?
Kick-Ass?
Yeah.
He does the Kingsman films. Mm. Kingsman 1, Kingsman 2, and... The King's Man prequel starring your hero, Ralph Fiennes.
Didn't know that existed.
Forgot about that when I was talking about Ralph Fiennes doesn't star in films anymore. He does. He starred in The King's Man, one of the few films of recent memory that I just had to stop watching because it was so shit.
oh, dear.
Yeah. That's the Matthew Vaughn trajectory. He starts off fairly shit with Layer Cake. Gets a little bit better and more interesting with the likes of the first Kingsman, the X-Men First Class, stuff going on. Kick-Ass is pretty good fun.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, it's the second Kingsman is awful.
First one's very fun, though, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The second one is really, really bad. The King's Man with Ralphie Fiennes is rubbish. I just watched Argyle on Apple Movies with Henry Cavill. It's been absolutely eviscerated by the critics. It's not that bad, but it's pretty bad. It's a long Kiss Goodnight ripoff. And it cost $180 million. Ooh. And it looks like it cost 20. It looks cheap as fuck. It's just absolutely baffling.
Right. Like an Adam Sandler film.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I don't want to cast aspersions. You've just cast them. Can I tell you what this says when you select to watch this film on Netflix? Can I tell you what it says?
Yeah, go on.
It says, in sort of small writing, where they've got the little thumbs, one of the most thumbed up films by members who watched it, says Netflix.
Well, there you go.
Isn't that the most depressing thing you've ever heard?
I mean,
come
it's pretty expected. I feel like I should
the
say
most,
at this point.
One of the most thumbed up out of all its fucking catalogue. Are you having a laugh?
By members that watched it, you know.
Yeah, but you're not thumbing it up if you haven't watched it.
Well, you might be.
They've just popped that on there for clarity.
Yeah, maybe. I would say, yeah, I mean, I think it's probably as a proportion of the people who gave it a thumb at all, right? Versus like... volume thumbs.
How often are you thumbing?
I'm never thumbing anything.
Right.
So only suckers are thumbing.
The most thumbed up.
Probably means like 5 of the 100,000 people that watched it gave it a thumbs up versus the 2 that normally would. And then it's like, oh, that's a higher proportion than normal. Even if, you know, that was like a 10, but 400,000 people watched a different thing, the proportion is lower. Do you know what I'm saying? It's probably something to do with that. That's why they word it in that way.
Are you beautiful minding me with numbers? Have you seen through and
I mean, it was quite simple calculations. But if you want a rusty chromey, I'll happily take that. What I'm saying is that there's no way they would add that additional language in if it didn't mean something along those lines, like that it's as a proportion of or something. I'm not that surprised for two reasons. One, it's fodder. So obviously people
it's
like
fodder.
It. It's exactly like it's fodder. The perfect Netflix film. If I got home on a Tuesday or something, and I just wanted to put something on that wasn't going to challenge me that much, but would entertain me and engage me, and I was looking on Netflix. If Layer Cake was there, I'd just watch it, and that's exactly what I expect from Netflix. So I think it's probably satisfying people for that reason, and also too, it's really not that bad. I mean, entertaining and fun. It's perfectly serviceable.
It's not
and
fun.
I enjoy it most of
it's
the time.
Grim. It's grim. It's a grim watch. It's not
a grim
funny
watch.
Like Lock, Stock or Snatch, is it?
No, I'm not saying it's as good as those. Although interesting and funny now that you're the one comparing them to Guy Ritchie movies. But I'm not saying it's as good as those films.
Whoever says these films are not Layer Cake isn't comparable to Lock, Stock or Snatch. I just don't understand that mindset. It's not as fun. It hasn't got the fun of those movies.
No, but do you know what it does have?
Daniel Craig.
Yeah, not just Daniel Craig. It's got the piercing blue eyes of Daniel Craig. It's got the absolute fuckability of Daniel Craig. Like, that is something that Snatch and Lockstock do not have.
Ooh, Snatch has got Bradley Pitts.
Yeah, but Snatch has got Bradley Pitts in the role as a man who isn't that fuckable.
I don't think Craig is fuckable in this movie. This is a GQ movie. It's all about like men in shirts pouting, and it's not. It's all style and no substance.
It's play hard, isn't it? Play tough. Play rough.
Also, it's a disconcerting watch because he is effectively doing his proto Bond performance.
Yeah.
That he turns up to 11 in Casino Royale. Like this is the film that definitely must have got him. Definitely got him the Bond job. Right?
How far ahead of Casino Royale was it? I mean, would he have already been in talks for Bond or?
No, it's 2 years later. Casino Royale is 2006. This is the film that definitely gets him Bond.
And you can see why. I mean, like, he's... The fun thing about his character is that he's... when I say cool, I don't mean like, trendy, fashionable. He's cool in hot situations. He's got that kind of... that seen it all before attitude, which is funny because the character... literally hasn't. That's kind of part of the story, is that he has been a peripheral figure on the around the outskirts of this dangerous crime London underworld, and yet when you throw him in the middle of any really dangerous situation, the vast majority of the time he's playing it pretty cool. So it's a bit confusing for this film, but as an audition for James Bond, it's ideal, isn't it?
This film has a hell of a cast.
Oh.
Let's run through the cast, mate.
Craig, Hardy, Foreman, Hawkins. I mean, there's more.
Tom Hardy, of course. You're not talking about another Hardy.
I'm talking about Craig Hardy and Foreman Hawkins. That's Craig Hardy, a good, old, sturdy, fashioned carpenter. Craig Hardy. Why do they call him Craig Hardy? Because he lives outside in the winter,
Sally Hawkins.
Yes, please. As playing Slasher, by the way.
Slasher.
The character Slasher. Slasher by name, by nature, I think you'll find. Because she looks like she's going to kill you with a knife.
She, of course, causes all kinds of problems as the dozy old bird of the horrible gangster.
It is a bit. But, they all are, aren't they, I suppose?
Ben Whishaw is really fun in this.
That's true.
Enjoying it as a little kind of cockney spiv.
Uh-huh.
Dexter Fletcher pops up.
Sure.
He's all right. And then a guy who was in This Life, a reference that no one will get, Colm Meaney from Star Trek. you'll know him. You know Colm Meaney.
Everyone
when
knows
you see
Colm
him. Meaney. Colm Meaney's in everything.
Yeah, you know him when you see him. What is Colm Meaney? And let me look.
Con Air.
Colm Meaney. And he's known for Yeah, I mean, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Layer Cake. Oh, Under Siege. That's nice.
Steven Seagal,
the Steven Seagal movie. Yeah, Con Air, of course. Let's play a game.
No.
Let's see how many more things of Col Meany's you can name.
I can't name them.
You might be able to. Oh, here's one I could have named if I thought about it long enough.
He's an Irish-American, and he crops up as invariably a kind of a gangster enforcer.
Yeah.
Goody baddie.
A goody baddie, yeah. That's basically what he is. He's a goody baddie. He's in the Damned United. Do you remember, of course, I think he plays...
He plays the opposite. He plays the
Don Revy.
Don Revy, depending on how you
wish to say it.
Take all your trophies and your pots and your fucking pans and throw them in the fucking bin, because I'm the new manager around these parts.
Yeah, of course, that's an impression of Michael Sheen as opposed to Col Meany, but it's a very good one nonetheless. It's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you won them dirty, and now we play clean, Leeds, you know. It's a very good film, The Damned United, isn't it? I really like that.
You don't like it?
Do you?
I've read the book, mate, so...
Yeah, of course, I know you've read the book, but are you not captured by the magnetism of Michael Sheen as Brian Clough?
He just doesn't have the... He doesn't come close to having the magnetism of Brian Clough. He just doesn't have the heft of Clough. He just feels like it's a man doing an impression of.
Yeah. He's a bit nice, isn't he? Like, there's not... I think... The thing I always thought about that film is I prefer him to Brian Clough. I wish he was Brian Clough. Because Brian Clough had... There was always like a kind of quite toxic edge to everything that Brian Clough said.
Right.
And what I mean, but there was a weight that he carried with it. Where you actually, you know, you thought, here's a man, he's got a way with words, but also, like, if I were to go out the back door here, I wonder if I'd, you know, lose a rib.
I want someone who doesn't quite nail the accent, but has that horrible edge to them.
Right.
So I want a different actor.
Yeah.
So who are we casting as Brian Clough?
I mean, Col Meany would have done a good Brian Clough as well, I think. Not just because he's right in front of me right now. You know... Daniel Craig.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel Day-Lewis.
Imagine Daniel Day-Lewis as Brian Clough. That's what you want. Like Michael Sheen, because he just, there's two on the nose. Like he's done David Frost. Of course he can do Brian Clough. He's great with voices.
Yeah.
It's like he may as well cast Rob Brydon.
That's right.
And Peter Taylor
leaves and they have that fallout and he goes off to manage Bournemouth or Brighton or whoever it is, Daniel Day-Lewis as Clough would be like, I've abandoned my boy.
You've come here and you've brought good and wealth, but you have also brought your bad habits as a backslider. You've lusted after women, and you have abandoned your child. Your child that you raised. You have abandoned all because he was sick, and you have sinned. So say it now. I am a sinner. Say it louder. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
Louder, Daniel. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
I am sorry, Lord.
I am sorry, Lord.
I want the blood.
I want the blood.
You have abandoned your child.
I've abandoned my child.
I will never backslide.
I will never backslide.
I was lost, but now I am found.
I was lost, but now I'm found.
I have abandoned my child.
I've abandoned my child.
Say it louder. Say it louder.
I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my boy.
Beg for the blood!
Give me the blood, Lord, and let me get away!
Do you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior?
Yes, I do.
Do you know how in all crime films, Adam, when the protagonist is ostensibly a baddie, you know, a criminal, they've always got to have them just about to retire? Is that
always.
Just? Do you think that's because you're supposed to like them and you can only like them as an audience off the bat if... You know, or it helps to like them off the bat if you think that they already know that what they do is wrong enough that they want to stop doing it. Is that it? It's about moral choices.
It's a good question because there's always, if it's a hitman or a heist man, there's just one last job. They've semi-retired. And then they get enticed back in. It's just one last job.
You wouldn't believe it. It's that Lee Evans joke, isn't it? It's like the keys are always in the last place you look. Well, of course, because you wouldn't continue looking.
Yeah, it may be. Is that it's the same thing?
Yeah, it's always, you can imagine the hitman down the hitman pub talking to each other. Oh, do you remember this job in 63? Oh, do you remember hitman John Buttons? Yeah. Oh, bless John. It was his last job. It was going to be his last one, and then he died. Yeah, well, it was his last one because he died. These hitmen, they can never stop, can they? They can't stop. So it's always their last job. And one wonders if the notion of crime, somewhere along the line, this idea originates from criminals, because I expect criminals convince themselves to go in to do things that are dangerous or are criminal activity by saying this is the last time. A bit like a drug addict, this is the last dose, right?
Yes, that's right. It's that there's that philosophical notion of they're out, but they can't help themselves. There will always be that kind of criminal. They always get lured back in, and there is that you're entering the story with them to see. It's a moral play, and the film is telling you, hey mate, don't go back for seconds, don't do these bad things, eventually your luck will run out.
I mean, it's often the most boring thing. That's why I'm bringing it up, because it features in so many. I'm even thinking of something like the assassination of Jesse James, for example. A lot of the moral story of the Brad Pitt Jesse James character in that film is, will he, when is enough enough? Will he stop doing it? It was the same with, it's the same with many other crime films. And it features in Layer Cake.
Most crime films.
Yeah, most crime films. It features heavily in Layer Cake at the beginning and at the end, and not really at any point throughout the middle, which is perhaps one of the reasons why it feels like it's a bit cheaty. But come the end of the film, and I won't give all the spoilers away, but at the end of the film, Daniel Craig essentially makes a decision after winning everything to then sort of let it all go, because he said at the beginning, this was my last job, I'm on the way out. And it's said and spoken as though it's some kind of triumphant celebration that he's made the right decision. But I don't think anyone in the audience really feels that way. I mean, who's getting to the end of Layer Cake and thinking, oh God, thank God he's getting out of that old lark. Yeah, it's fun. It's been fun. I don't want to get out of it. I don't care whether he's in it or not.
Yeah, because it's all a fiction. Compare that ending to the end of the greatest crime film of all time, Goodfellas, where Henry Hill, played by Ray Liotta, has pushed his luck thoroughly to the point where he has to do the one thing that you're not supposed to do, rat on your friends. He rats on his friends to save his own ass, and then he ends up in suburbia, and he's a schnook, and he's a nobody, and he's lost everything that he values.
But, I mean, that's true, but also this is a really good example, because it's not about moralizing, right? It's about the character, because I don't know if you've noticed, but in all the films that you watch where the main character has the opportunity to tattle on their friends, to rat, as you put it, you want them to, because you want them to get away with it, to get off, to be free. They're your character, that's your person, and so it's not really about whether they do the right or wrong thing. It's just about them, isn't it, and your relationship with them.
I think so. It's interesting that you framed it like is part of the reasoning for framing the character like the baddie, the hero. Is part of that supposed to appeal to us like, oh, we're supposed to like this guy more because he recognizes the immorality of what he does?
Yeah. It's also a trick because it allows him to be a fish out of water, even in the water that he lives in, right? He is one of us because to an ordinary audience member of Layer Cake, the non-criminal, we watch that world of crime and we are, either sort of horrified or we are, we're not part of it.
We're titillated
and unhorrified in equal measure, but like we're not part of it. We look upon it as though we are external to it. And that's exactly what Daniel Craig does as well, even though he very much is part of that world. The film allows him, because he's retiring and because it expresses that he's sort of on the outskirts of it, it allows him to be both fish out of and in water. He's Schrodinger's fish.
That's what bugged me about rewatching it is, I mean, it's so hacky and old anyway. It's this notion, it's this fantasy. It is this GQ male fantasy of you want this guy, you want this life where you can not really work for a living, but you're rubbing shoulders with lots of tough, hard men, but also you can hold your own.
Yeah.
And also, you know, but also you've got a code. These guys always have a fucking code. Mm-hmm. Like, even a film like, say, let's jump. I'm going to jump across to another kind of baddie. Leon, no women, no children.
Sure.
Oh, does that make you a good guy, does it, Leon? You fucking pedo. No, it doesn't. You're a fucking paid assassin, okay? It's pornography for... it's pornography for Jeremy Clarkson fans.
Just recently watched The Gentleman, which is Guy Ritchie's Netflix show.
Yeah.
I think it's like, you know, I don't know, 8 episodes or something.
Based on the movie.
Based on the movie. But I will say of it, it's you know... It's good. I liked it. I know people hate it and say it's shit. And yeah, I'm sure it is shit, but I don't think that's what it's for. And I think anyone coming to it who's seen anything Guy Ritchie has made before will know what it is. And you make a decision when you choose to press play about whether you want to engage with what you know it to be or not. And I did that and I really enjoyed it. I, you know, found it quite watchable. I wanted to know what happened next. It's got Ray Winston in it. I like that. He's barely in any scenes because he's in prison. And also I thought, hey, they probably filmed him all on one day.
Can I tell you something?
Yes, please.
Can I tell you who else loved the Gentleman TV series?
Who else loved the Gentleman TV series?
My mum.
Your mum loved it? Really?
I saw my mum recently and she said, it like Netflix, and she went, oh, have you seen The Gentleman? Oh, it's so good. It was so funny. Oh, the bit with the chicken. She went, the bit with the chicken. It was so funny. And I'd watched a bit of it. I was like, oh, okay. So, you know, you and my mum.
Me and your mum. Yeah, I mean,
same
you
page.
Know,
like that, I think,
like a peas in a pod, mate. The bit with the chicken was funny.
It's Netflix spans generations. It's appealing.
Yeah. And the bit with the chicken ends with, you know, the horrible bloody mess. So it's funny that your mum liked that. You know, anyway, the point I was making was The Gentleman does something, does two things similar to, does one thing similar to, I keep thinking of Shaft. I'm not talking about Shaft. I'm talking about Snatch. The Gentleman does something similar to Snatch, and it does something...
Have you seen... Hang on a sec. Have you seen that? The Samuel L. Jackson film with Shaft?
No, I haven't seen Shaft, no.
Okay, I was going to say that's plum, forgot you forgot.
Yeah.
Carry on.
The Gentleman does something similar to Snatch, and it does something similar to Layer Cake as well. What it does that's similar to Snatch is he uses the traveler community again, but in the role of, like... slightly story tale twisty, and in the sense that the characters are painted as though you never really trust that they're going to hold up their end of the bargain, but they always do, right? And that's the thing about them, is they are presented as this fearsome, violent, unpredictable, and like tricky community. But because they are always the heroes at the end, they always do the right thing, and you like them. I think he sort of gets away with that representation. Plus, it's worth saying that, like, you know, what's his name? Gary O'Neill. Not Gary O'Neill. What's his name? I'm not Guy Ritchie I'm not defending Guy Ritchie or anything.
Gary O'Neill. Gary O'Neill. Where the fuck the Bournemouth did that manager. Come from?
Right. Guy Ritchie.
Okay. It's been a long week.
He's
for
not
Joe
the Bournemouth
Devine.
Manager. He's the Wolves manager.
Okay. I like the fact that you decided to correct yourself on a film podcast because you know your footy fans
are gonna
be watching you like a whore.
Oh man, this week I had to just to take a quick detour. I had to go to the offices of Penguin in London because Gary O'Neill, because they publish, Penguin publish the TIFO book, which it was 52 rules, to understand the beautiful game. It's now 62 rules.
10 new rules.
10 new rules, yeah. Hey, if you know, I said to people in the video when we announced it, if you bought this before, do not buy it again. But if you didn't buy it last time, it's even better than it was, you know.
Turn up the brightness of your telly. Rule number 60, rule number 58.
Turn it slightly now because you turned it up too high. Yeah. No, it's much better.
Rule number 59. And listen, imagine that you're watching something else.
Yeah, that's my main rule. But I stand by the work of this absolutely terrific book, mostly written by my colleague Seb and beautifully illustrated by my sister Alice. It's actually, we joke around. It's a terrific piece of work that we're proud of. But because it's a kind of like reissue, I'm less excited about it than I was about publishing it the first time. But anyway, it was published yesterday. And I had to go to the Penguin's headquarters in London to say hi to them and, you know, celebrate the publication of the book, but also to announce their sweepstake for the Euros, which are coming up as we record this.
How many people were you speaking to?
Well, there were 24 people, I think, because that was how many teams were in the Euros. So, you know, they've got their own little sweepstake going at work, and there's an editor there called Richard who edited our book, who hosts this for every tournament. We did one for the World Cup as well, which was quite fun last time. Anyway, I got there yesterday with my sister Alice, who's a big fan of women's football but doesn't know much about men's football. And it suddenly dawned on me that 2 years ago when we did this, I had my colleague Seb, who wrote most of the book there. So when a team name was drawn and someone came up to collect that team, Seb said something really insightful about the team. And about 5 minutes before we started, I was like, oh, shit, I'm supposed to say something about every team. And let me tell you, I have not been paying attention to international football. Like, I don't know what's happening. All of my information is from, you know, minimum 18 months ago, 2 years ago. So I had this slightly awkward 10 minutes as Richard was reading out the names of these Penguin employees and they were stepping forwards to collect their team. And all I could really think to do was say things basically over and over again, like when, you know, if England was pulled out, I'd go, oh, England, yo, hey, you'll have something to talk about, that sort of thing. And if
I love that. Like, you know, if like Belgium came up, you'd go, oh, Mols and Fritz.
Ooh, lovely chocolate. Lovely. You know, that sort of thing. Yeah. 600 beers in one pub. But then if a team like Slovenia was pulled out, I'd go like, oh, you fucked it. You've wasted your money. Fuck off home. You know, that's basically all I would say. And I think I did that 16 times or something. And by the end of it, I wanted to crawl inside my own arse and die in there. They're all lovely, the people at Penguin, but I you know. And anyway, as I was stood there looking around at these people saying these things, I felt a great sense of hollowness and shame about my existence. And I thought, oh man, I need to think. I've become a man who, not only was I not excited to be there because we'd already done this before, but I wasn't even that worried. I didn't even think until 5 minutes beforehand about what I was supposed to do. And even as it was happening, Adam, and I could see around the room, I looked around the room, and I'm one of these people, I look in their eyes now. I don't even look at the floor like a normal person when I stand there. I just look in their eyes. And I can see it's not working. I can see I'm dying.
Joe, we've had exactly the same experience this week.
Really?
I had on a lot smaller scale, where I ended up having to speak to the entirety of my company, which was it was around 30 people. I had to present something sort of fairly short. It's a part of a bigger, long meeting. In my head, I was like, yeah, okay, I've got it. This is the idea, and I'll be able to speak about this. So let's not over prepare this. Let's not overwork it. Other people presented with slides, and then I stood up, didn't have any slides, and all the little funny turns of phrase that I'd thought through, like in passing, they disappeared.
Right.
I didn't have any of my notes there on my laptop, which was nowhere close to me. I hadn't written, like, Stuart Lee writes things on his hand, like bullet points. I didn't even have my bullet points.
No.
And just like you, I was looking at people and they were nodding and I could see from their faces that this was not going well. And I didn't, it sent me back. I carried on. I didn't start crying.
No.
So I feel quite proud of myself.
Yeah, man.
But it was all a bit, it was all a bit shit. Like yours sounded a bit shit. And I felt afterwards, you know, you've underprepared, you've underestimated, you wanted that. I pretend there's that cognitive dissonance of wanting it to go well and thinking it will go well, but not really doing enough work to make it go well. And then feeling like a cunt afterwards.
Yeah. Well, but this is the interesting thing though, because like, I used to be so afraid of those moments in my life. And now I think it's a mixture of, I've had so many of them.
I love it. Yeah. Perfect.
And I have the experience of being in front of large crowds of people that now I'm in the privileged position where I didn't feel it as it was happening yesterday. I don't feel it now. I know it happened. But I was in that room looking in their eyes, and I can see this isn't working at all. You know, you don't.
No one's enjoying these jokes about the Netherlands.
No, yeah, I mean
these half baked riffs about tulips.
Yeah,
and
they work, you know, at Penguin windmills. For Christ's sake. They've got, you know, the I'm sure they get authors along all the time who are, you know, like wackadoodle. Look at me. I'm not. They're used to people like me. They can, it doesn't work on them at all, and yet I just carry on anyway. I just keep doing it, and I watch them more intently, and I think, well, you know, what's this like for you? What would it be like if I looked in your eyes for too long, you know? And then I did that for a bit, and it's like a psychosis. And then no, it's like a drug, like you want it more and more.
I love the fact that you both felt the shame, but also it was kind of shame off a duck's back.
It was shame off a duck's back for sure.
Equally, I think I have been kicking myself a bit about like looking like a cunt, but then at the same time thinking it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't.
And I even as I was fucking it up and mumbling and like not really doing a good job, I sort of realized it didn't matter, and I could all just let it pass.
Yeah,
seeing the faces was the hard bit. You know, that's the hard bit where you're projecting. You're thinking,
yeah,
oh, they're embarrassed for me.
Yeah.
They're really embarrassed for me.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it becomes like, is that my shit?
It's our shit, man. Like these people are not embarrassed for you, or like they probably haven't even noticed. You know, they probably just, I mean, they probably think it's fine. You know, it's just in our heads.
I'd worn a different style shirt that day.
Oh. Was it a risky style for you?
Outside of your comfort zone? No, because I'm, you know what? This is all about the growth of me is I don't want, I've got a certain outfit,
mm-hmm.
which is fairly standard. It's kind of either a grey or a blue shirt,
yeah.
Uniqlo, COS, with a smart pair of joggers, New Balance. It's very much like a little uniform.
Arm tats.
You can mix and match.
Biro in the shirt pocket.
Right.
Yeah. Glasses on the head.
Glasses on the head. Beard on the face. Anyway, so it's a bit sunny that day.
You're pushing. Are you about to tell me you've been pushing some boundaries?
I didn't think it was. I decided it was. It felt quite warm, so I thought I'd wear a short sleeve shirt, but a colourful one.
Oh,
and I've got a couple of these, and they just fit summer.
They just say summer when you look at them.
They say they're a bit eye-catching.
Yeah,
but then because I'm wearing
not ostentatious though.
I might show you and you might think
they're on the edge of ostentatious, but they're not. you know.
Because it's a short sleeve shirt, there's not actually that much fabric for it to be ostentatious.
No.
And everything else is like, I'm fucking wearing joggers and stuff.
So that is how it works. So the more fabric, the more ostentatious. Because I've often found when people wear very skimpy clothes, I think that they're, you know, that's not ostentatious at all, but...
Exactly. More fabric, more ostentatious.
Yeah.
As soon as I arrived, basically every single person whose path I crossed made a comment.
Yeah.
You know, surfer dude, emo dude, skater dude.
Yeah.
These are the comments
they were making.
Yeah.
For a second, I thought you were listing the people. I thought you were listing people in your office whose names you didn't want to say or didn't know. So, like, you know, like skater dude said something, surfer dude said something. I'm like, hang on. Why have you got so many dudes there?
Skater dude comes up to me and he says, what the fuck is up with your shirt, mate? Yeah. You look like an absolute cunt.
Yeah. Where's your elbow pads?
He says, mate, you forgot to wax your ball bag, douchebag.
Different kind of wax,
I hate you. Emo dude, he just starts singing Panic at the Disco at me. So it was all just very, very confusing.
It's 9 in the afternoon.
But so this was all leading up to where I would be, to the thing where I would be speaking. And everyone had just made either part. And then even when someone said, oh, like it was a nice compliment, I would look and I would think, you don't mean that.
Yeah.
What do you mean? You don't like this shirt. Mm. Why have you said that? You must think I'm an absolute fucking bellend.
Yeah. God, so you were in this place before you even did the public speaking. Yeah. No one was thinking any of the things you think they were. I can 100% say that now.
People were just saying nice things because...
No, I mean, when you were up there doing your speech, the things you thought they were thinking, you know, embarrassed for you, whatever, they weren't. You were just feeling that way because of your slightly risky shirt.
No. Sonny, friend of the podcast, he just came over and made a funny joke. He went, hey, mate, if you forgot your surfboard out the back... And then he was the only one who made a joke. Everyone else was just saying, because it was a little bit different.
They were saying,
oh, that's nice.
Right.
That's different.
Yeah.
And I'd say, can you stop saying things about me? Stop saying things. But then I think that's the problem why you stop doing things.
Yeah, man.
You don't want to be the center of attention or be the kind of person who's the center of attention. And then you become the center of attention.
It's not so much the center of attention. Because I think you enjoy being center of attention. I think what you don't enjoy is being seen to be someone who wants to make an active change to their life.
Yeah,
right. And a short sleeved, summery, colorful shirt versus the kind of drab, long-sleeved, grey and brown and black shirts that you would ordinarily wear. Maybe a navy blue.
Not a brown and black shirt. You make me sound like a fucking Nazi, mate. Take that
the
back.
The sort of shirt you might wear if you worked in the zoo, you know, or if you had a job outdoors, yeah? I think that's quite a significant change. And I think you enjoy being the centre of attention, but if that centre of attention is centering on, hey, Adam Richman, who does he think he is? Look at that shirt he's wearing. What is he trying to make a positive change in his life? Get back in your lane.
Your box, mate.
Your box.
Yes. Yeah. All I've wanted is to be seen.
And then you're changing.
No, wait. I'm getting seen for the wrong thing. I've been crying out to be seen for inside, for the heart. And then I turn up in this fucking stupid shirt and everyone's like, oh, we see you now. And I'm like, ah, fucking forget
it. All it took was a more colourful shirt.
I hate my shirt. I hate this. I fucking stand up, make a cunt of myself, just like you did. it's good though. I think I like the fact that we had like... We were on parallel weeks.
Man, it gets even more parallel. I wanted to wait for you to finish your story before I interrupted, but I visited my mother at the weekend and I went to the... I very rarely get the opportunity to go to a Tesco Extra. Do you know what I mean by extra?
Yeah, like a small shit one.
No, that's an express. This is the thing. There's three stages to Tesco.
Oh, there's a big one.
There's a big one. So Express is city centre Tesco, very small, high prices. Then you've got your normal, run-of-the-mill Tesco, which is, you know, the big ones, but just with food. And then you've got the very special Tesco Extra, that also it sells clothes, it sells kitchen appliances. It's like almost like a Walmart type thing, you know, minus the firearms.
They need to rebrand all of those, I think.
Sure. I mean, take it up with Tesco, but with Dr. Tesco. But anyway, I went all the way to Bangor, which is not far from where my mother lives, so I could go to the Tesco Extra, because they sell a Fred and Florence clothing brand. It's only sold in Tesco. And it's my favorite hoodie, the plain black hoodie, yeah? And I try to get one whenever I get the opportunity. Anyway, I went along to this Tesco, and they did have it there. They didn't have it quite in my size. They had it in one size smaller, which just about fits, but it's a bit snug. So I bought it, and I also thought, a bit like you, I thought, well, maybe I'll, you know, what if I maybe I'm, you know.
Can I get a shirt? Am I allowed?
Because for listeners who don't know, haven't like watched me in videos, I basically exclusively wear black clothes. I wear a black hoodie, black joggers, black jeans, whatever. But anyway, I always did as a teenager. I was a goth, an emo. You know, I enjoyed all the darker sides of teenage life, like Nickelback. And so I was always wearing, black clothes, and I just kind of carried that on. And also, I'm a big, tall guy, and my weight fluctuates. Sometimes I'm more overweight than other times, and black has always been, it's always a slimming color. And I think I've just got comfortable and used to wearing it, right? But the original reason that I wore it anyway was to kind of blend in a bit and like not be making any kind of stuff. I'm not wearing shiny black and all dog collars and stuff. I'm just wearing normal clothes that are of a darker color, in an attempt to, as you said, not stand out, not be the center of attention. But of course, what's happened is it's become like I've got a uniform in my office. Like everyone comments on it, and that, fair enough. Like I would do the same thing. I exclusively wear black, and
you would seek out someone's weakest point. Yeah. You would find it, and you would nail in, and you would poke it. And
no,
mention
I would.
It,
I wouldn't do that. But I would unintentionally make comments that weren't designed to upset you, and in isolation wouldn't. But when they are the 60th time you've heard it that year, you know, it's like, yeah, maybe. Anyway, so basically, the problem is it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, because if I go into the office wearing all black, like once a week, someone will go, oh, you know, in his uniform or whatever, and I'll go, hey, ba-bum, bow. But if I go into the office and I wear anything, and I mean anything that isn't black, it's like the first five people I see all mention it to me, to the extent where trying to not make a statement and wear normal clothes has had over time, the entirely opposite impact. And I find myself, similarly to you, I'd love to make a change. I'm a man in my mid-30s now. I've been wearing black clothes for 20 years, right? And I don't want to anymore. I want to, sometimes I think, wouldn't it be great if I could get a suit that really fit me? And I just rocked up one day in my office wearing like a nice suit, like not too ostentatious, not too trendy, but just a nice suit. Or I got like I went in with some blue jeans and a white shirt on or something, but I can't crack out of it because in my head.
Wait, hang on a sec. You're not gonna. You don't suit blue jeans and a white shirt. Let me knock that.
Well,
on
Well, no, I don't
right
suit
now.
Anything other than no, black hoodie. No, that's the problem.
No. You'd look gorgeous in a lovely Reservoir Dogs black suit, white shirt, black tie.
Right, but no, you'd not fucking, blue jeans.
No, blue jeans and a white shirt, you look like an absolute fucking cunt. But
this is the other thing, I don't even know how to dress because I've only ever worn a black uniform.
I'd love to be a suit guy. I'd love to be able to just pop a suit on. You see a guy in a suit and you think, you just assume he's worn that suit every single day of his life.
Yeah, you think, fuck
imagine,
yeah, man.
But imagine that's the first day. You don't know that guy.
No.
That could be the first day that guy's ever worn the suit. But it looks like he's worn it every single day.
When I put a suit on to go to a wedding or something.
I saw you in your wedding suit.
Yeah.
And you suited it. You suited your suit.
Because right. I felt like a clown. You know, like I was at a circus. And like someone had to, like a man had to be paid a lot of money to design a suit that would fit the specifications of my unique body. like for a clown or a, like a
yeah, clowns notoriously have misshapen bodies.
Yeah, you know,
clowns are notoriously going to Savile Row going, Claire, can you get me my new suit there, Mr. Savile Row? I need it tailored. Oh. I don't know why I'm from the south over there.
But this is why on my wedding day, my uncle Damien, it was a very sweet gesture. He took me to a tailor to get a suit made, and then he bought me the suit. It was very kind of him to do that. And so I got it made with him, and I picked a green color for the
nice
suit.
Dark green, yeah.
And I did it because I thought, well, this is my opportunity to branch out. I'm already branching out because I'm wearing a suit, yeah?
And you're getting married, mate.
And I'm getting married.
You're getting married. Yeah. That's the biggest branch is you're getting married.
And it doesn't matter what I look like. so I'm already branching out because I'm getting a suit, so I might as well branch out further. Maybe 2025 I'll start getting some new clothes. Oh, anyway, my story. I forgot about my story.
So, yeah, the next bit of the story is you've established the context. We are on parallel timelines at the minute. This is, I cannot wait to find out what did you turn up to work in.
I have got a favourite scene in this film, Layer Cake, Adam. My favourite scene, it does involve Sienna Miller, of course, who's in this film.
She is fantastic in this film.
Electric.
She's such an underrated actress. Mm-hmm. And she's been so mistreated by the British tabloids and not really been given a proper shake. There's no way she's been in enough stuff, and whenever she is really, really great. She's properly fucking underrated as an actress. She's really fucking great, really great. And she's barely in this film, and she's the only thing you'd remember.
She explodes off the screen, I would say. I remember watching a film I was oddly, surprisingly pleased by. Was the film from 2015, Burnt, with Bradley Cooper. Did you ever watch it?
Yes, I did. I really want to talk about that film for ages, so we can't do that here.
Okay, maybe we can do that another time, but like, I remember watching that, and Sienna Miller blew my fucking socks off, man. Like, she is so, so incredible in that film, and has been, as you say, incredible in a number of performances. But the scene I'm talking about is the scene in the club where Daniel Craig is there. He's with Ben Whishaw. They're sat in like the VIP area, and the cinematography is quite fun in this moment as well, because the scene starts as a tight on Daniel Craig's face, where the camera starts to zoom out from his face, and then just to his left you can see Ben Whishaw is sat next to him, too close. He's the guy that's too close in the club. He's got his arm around the back, and he's sort of shouting in his ear about something or other. And you can just see Daniel Craig is focusing on something else off in the distance. He's motionless. You know, you can't hear anything Ben Whishaw's saying. He doesn't care that Ben Whishaw can see that he's not really paying attention. And then the camera turns and it cuts to Sienna Miller dancing alone, but in the middle of a crowded dance floor. And that song by The Source, what's it called? You've Got the Love. You got the love, I need to see me through. Like that version. Boom, 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 boom. It plays, and she's smoking there too. And it's like...
Mate, she's smoking. Hey, she's smoking.
She's smoking a cigarette in the middle of the dance floor, and she's just staring back at him. And that, on its own... That's a music video. Like, I don't need any of the context for this. Like, this is a wonderful scene, and I love the way that it's shot. I love the music. The song is so perfect, and the soundtrack generally is very well selected for the film, I would say. But it has moments like that I think elevate it beyond just being kind of, you know, run of the mill shit.
Do you want to play the box office game?
I'd love to play the box office game, yeah, if that's okay. If that's okay, if you're all right with it.
This is a This is tricky business, okay?
I would say this is tricky business. I mean, it's so tricky, in fact, that I'm going to, as a special one-off for you, I'm going to extend to 20%. It's a 20% allotment because it's real tough. But please predict for me the bracket's estimated budget for the film Welcome to the Layer Cake.
Welcome to the Layer Cake, son. Yes, it's the cast is up the yin yang, but they're all kind of, no one's popped yet.
No. I mean, Gambon's popped, but you know.
Yeah, but he's just turning up.
Yeah.
He's barely in it. No. He's in. He's like, that's a day's shooting.
I think he's bad as well, to be clear, but go on.
Oh, I would love to have talked about Gambon being bad. Michael Gambon is a fantastic actor.
Yep.
He's,
yep. Love him.
He's
great.
He is the singing detective.
Uh-huh.
A phenomenal TV series,
yep.
From the 80s. So yeah, the idea that you could get a bad performance out of Gambon.
Well, I don't think the performance is particularly bad. I just think it doesn't work in the film, you know.
It's just bad script writing. There's no way that guy should be introduced that late. It's rubbish.
Well, how much do you think it cost?
it's a fucking English gangster flick.
Yeah.
Early 2000s. Vaughn has got some sort of heft. He's scrabbling around some cash.
I mean, there's quite a lot goes on in the film, doesn't it? But
it's a little indie picture.
It is, but it doesn't feel horrendously cheap. So either Vaughn's done a very good job, or it's not that cheap.
Historically, English films didn't, budget-wise, they just don't get that much because they don't sell well. So that's what I'm going to base it on. I'd rather underdo it than overdo it. So I'm going to say $5 million.
Well,
I think that's overdoing it. Do you know what? I think that's overdoing it, but I'm going to say five.
You need the 20%, but with 20%, that's fine because it was actually £4 million. Oh.
£4 million.
So actually, it probably was about $5 million, depending on the exchange rate at the time in 2005. No, I tell you what, this is about a $7 or $8 million movie, but it's a four million pound movie.
Yeah, I meant pounds because I was thinking there's no way that you know. Yeah, I meant pounds.
Well, the rest of our figures are calculated in dollars.
Great. So yeah, £4 million, and I said £5 million.
Yeah,
definitely said pounds.
That's right. I mean, you did now. Opening weekend US and Canada is May the 15th, 2005. So I assume that was about 6 months after its initial release in the UK. What do you think it could have taken in the US and Canada on that weekend?
Christ, I mean...
Yeah, very hard to tell for British film that did not have a consecutive release.
$50,000?
Not far off. It did $82,000. I think we can acknowledge that's a bit of a stab in the dark. I'm not sure how easy it would be to work that out.
Well, you know, you say stab in the dark, mate. I didn't say anything in the millions. I knew it was going to be sub a million. I said 50,000. I'm not stabbing in the dark.
No, I'm not saying
you're stabbing in the dark.
It was a compliment. I was saying that you did very well to get that
stab in the dark. Okay. Is like, I don't know what I'm doing. No, that was
no a stab like in the endless dark universe. Is you don't know what you're doing. A stab in the dark is like you could be, you know, stabbing in a dark box. You probably, you know, you could hit it more likely depending on the size of the thing.
No, stab in the dark is random.
I'm complimenting
no,
you.
No, that's not. I love the fact that you think that that's a fucking compliment,
right?
Because that's not a compliment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's an anti-compliment.
Because you knew it wasn't going to take my guts, a million, mate, on its opening weekend. When it only cost $4 million and it was released 6 months after its initial release.
In fact, I meant, when I said that, it's like I knew it was sub 100 grand, 100K.
Right.
That's what I meant to say.
Right.
I knew it was
right.
Sub 100K and I said 50.
Sure.
And it was 80.
Yeah.
And you went, oh, yeah, that's a stab in the dark. Fuck you.
This guy, man, you must feel nauseous with how often you're right about things because it's like, it really does. It's a constant.
Nauseous.
It must be hard.
Nauseous.
It must be hard to be. To be right, it must make you sick to your stomach how often you're right. Now, gross worldwide.
What the
this
fuck?
Is in dollars, gross worldwide.
Great, okay. Another
no, it's
stab
not, of course,
in the
it's
dark.
Not a stab in the dark. This one's much more straightforward for you. And when you don't get it, I'm going to call you a dumb cunt. You've actually done so well so far as well that I'm considering loosing that 20%. But we'll keep it at 20 for now, just to be a little friendly.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. So I still think this is a tricky business because who knows? Does the buzz start building around Danny Craig? Does he start? Do people in America start to know? Hey, this guy's gonna be Jimmy Bond. He's gonna be Jimmy Bond. Let's go get. He's in this picture. Let's go. Hey, Guy Ritchie. I heard Guy Ritchie was gonna direct this picture.
Could be.
Let's go get to see this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I guess whether or not that happened is a bit of a stab in the dark, but
it's a real stab in the dark. You know, the real box office for this would be what it made in the UK.
Uh-huh, yeah. Sadly, that's not the game we're playing.
Do you have that info?
I don't, no. I just have the gross worldwide.
Do you have the info for how much it made in the UK?
No.
Can you access it now?
I mean, I can look and see if I can find it, but like...
I'm going to give you the answer for gross worldwide... I mean, basically, the gross worldwide will be basically what it made in the UK.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite hard. No, like, all the information I can find about it online is...
Sorry.
Oh,
sorry,
no,
sorry,
hold
sorry.
On. Oh, no. Hold on.
Oh, no.
I can't get the... I can't get the specific UK information, but I could tell you the percentage of it that breaks down as international, but it will include everywhere else apart from America.
Let's say it made $12 million.
Scab dabba dabba dee dab dab da dab do up dabba da 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 ba dabba dabba dee dab dab da da
do. The Scat Man, is he there?
It's the Scat Man, baby, come on. 11,850,214 dollar bills.
I think 10 of those would have been UK. UK,
yeah, not far
bills.
Off. International accounts for 80.3% of that. So it's about $9.5 million comes international. So it didn't like explode in America, but $2 million in America. You know, enough people went to see it. It played in 200 theaters. In America, so you know.
Well, yeah, the Americans are hot to trot after some lock stock.
Yeah, it was rated like, R, of course, in America. So you know,
of course it was.
So it's not so straightforward, but I mean, well done to everyone involved, really.
Do you want to play the game where one of us reads out a list of movies they think the other one has forgot they even saw in the first place?
I can think of naught better, Adam.
I'm going to get you because I know for a fact I've got one in my back pocket that you've announced.
What, for
that
a hard
you
fact?
Forgot you. I know for a. No, for a fact. Hard fact. What's the difference between a hard fact and a fact? It's like people who say I've got a little factoid for you.
Don't know. Listen. Don't try and hit.
Do you know what a factoid is?
Yes, I know what a fucking factoid is. Don't come in here and think you can tell me what a factoid is.
You tell me what a factoid is.
A factoid is not. It's a little story that's often reported to be true but isn't true. It's a lie. It's the opposite of a fact.
Joe Devine knows what a factoid.
Yeah, everyone does. Do you know why? Because of people like you that go around saying, actually, I think you'll find a factoid isn't even a real fact. It's the opposite of a fact, you'll find.
Not enough people are saying that.
Not enough people are saying.
Not enough people are saying. Like, if someone says, "Oh, this is very unique."
Yeah.
Excuse me, what? Very unique? Not possible. Something's either unique or not unique. It's not very unique.
Spoken like a true sub editor.
Chump.
Is it a hard fact though?
What? I forgot. What I don't know. Talking about.
Can I tell you something just quickly? Well, on the notion of language. I won't talk about it loads, but I watched The English Patient over the weekend.
I've never seen it.
If you're not. I really want you to watch it. I won't tell you anything about it.
Have you seen it before? Were you rewatching it?
I've seen bits of it before. I'd never seen it all the way through, but I'd seen enough of it that there weren't too many surprises. But basically, I was watching on a train, and it was the perfect length. It was quite a long film, Adam. It's like it's not far off 3 hours, but 2:35 or something. But it was the perfect length for my train journey. And I laughed aloud in the carriage after about 20, 30 minutes, because there's a scene where Ralph Fiennes is eating a plum and he says, "This is a very plum plum." And I thought, plum. Man, this is the canon plum. Of our plum story from the English patient. I think you should watch it. It's kind of it's weird, man, and it would be really good for us to be able to chat about it, because I think it says a lot about English actors and filmmaking. But anyway, it's a plum.
That film was massive.
Yeah, seriously.
It was all anyone was talking about, like, that year.
Yeah.
It was
Anyone that wasn't talking about what a factoid was.
And I, of course, in my youthful exuberance, decided, well, I'm not watching this film.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch Trainspotting.
Yeah. For the record, I'm not sure that you would like it. I'm not saying it's definitely not your type of film, but like...
I
wouldn't expect you to like to text me afterwards and go, magnificent. I don't think that will happen.
But I loved it. I love the director. Anthony Minghella directed one of my favorite films, Talented Mr. Ripley.
There you go. And it definitely had. I mean, because it's set in the 30s, just before the Second World War begins, and then after it's begun. They're mostly in North Africa. It's got that feeling of, like, you know, the Brits, old Brits abroad. So it definitely recaptures a bit of that Ripley feel.
Okay.
Watch it, and we'll talk about it more.
What did you watch it on?
It's on Netflix, I think.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my list. Wanted.
Oh, with James McAvoy and Angelina Jolie and Morgan Freeman. Oh,
that sounds like the disappointed sound of plum. Do we want to start series two with Wanted? Come on, mate. I got you, didn't I? Just admit I got you.
Yeah, it's not. It's partial plum. It's not full plum. I've actually seen this film a number of times, and
why are you groaning?
Because it's a shit film. That's why.
What did you rewatch it?
Because it's objectively a bad film. I don't know, because I think it was one of those ones where, like, I had an illegally downloaded version of it when I didn't have that many. And so, you know, you find yourself, there's a power cut, or you're on a train back in the day with no internet or whatever, and you watch one of the things, you just rewatch the thing you have. It's like wearing thin the old VHS. Wanted was that for me. So I feel quite intimately, I can tell you what the inside of his flat looks like. Okay. Let's tell you, like, not quite word for word, but the argument that he has with his boss, who is portrayed by a morbidly obese woman. And, like, I think it's very unpleasant. There's a lot around that scene that I think, looking back, they might feel a little, you know.
Yeah, it's a hateful film. Okay,
it's a hateful film. It's mainly, I'd love to do James McAvoy. I'd love to do Angelina Jolie. We haven't had some of these characters. Morgan Freeman, I don't think, has really appeared. So it's definitely a possibility. It's partial plum. It's just shit. And I'm concerned that, like, I don't want two in a row where the film's kind of shit, you know?
Yeah,
but
no, okay.
We'll circle back if there isn't a deeper plum.
Yeah, you're right. Actually, Layer Cake followed by Wanted is a real... Okay, Sleepy Hollow.
With Johnny Depp?
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever watched it all the way through. Certainly not enough for it to qualify, I don't think.
Bowfinger?
Is that with Bill Murray?
No.
Is it with Eddie Murphy?
Yeah, Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy.
I'm trying to remember if I have ever actually seen it. It was one that my older cousins used to tell me that I had to see.
That's not that good.
Is it a bowling film?
No.
No, what's the bowling film?
Oh, that's Kingpin.
I don't think I've seen Bowfinger.
Jurassic World.
What, like the... first of the new franchise?
Yeah, the past franchise.
That's interesting. That's interesting that you've said that.
You can tell me one thing you remember of that movie, apart from the fact that Chris Pratt is in it.
I remember of that movie that the sister of the mother of the children that are featured in the film.
Yeah.
Wait, no.
Sister of the mother.
That's Ron Howard's daughter.
That's Bryce Dallard.
Bryce Dallas. Howard. But her sister is played by the dad's secretary from Arrested Development, Kitty.
Oh, Judy Greer.
Judy Greer. And so that's very funny. And I remember that Chris Pratt trains the velociraptors through clicking.
Is that enough? Okay.
And also, I will have to tell you that I just recently watched the second and third iteration of this franchise, having never seen them before. So it's not a terrible time to do this because I haven't seen the first of them for a long time, but I have recently seen the sequels, so I could fill our listeners with fresh information about where the wacky dinosaur story goes, or one could argue that it's a little fresh in the memory.
I don't like this.
It feels a little dishonest.
Yeah, I don't like your vibe. I haven't got you. I'm not happy.
It's not a plum. I'll be honest with you. It might be a fruit, but it's not a plum. No, but I felt bad because you stopped for a while and you were hesitant to give one that you thought was a definite plum. So I didn't want to instant reject it.
I've got two more.
Okay.
LA Confidential.
I mean, this is a very plum, as Ralph Fiennes says. Like it's a classic.
Too plummy.
I mean, it's so plummy. I'm drowning in plum juice. Like I've seen that film. I have seen it. I couldn't even tell you what it's about, Adam. Like, I genuinely couldn't. But I know I've seen it because I bought it on DVD as a teenager and I watched it because everyone was like, oh, LA Confidential. And I watched it and I thought, what's this? Don't even know what this is. Rubbish.
It breaks
boring.
My heart to say those words to you.
Right.
This is based on a book by James Ellroy. I'm a James Ellroy guy, man. Right. I've got all his books.
Wasn't he the lead elf of Rivendell? Who's James Ellroy?
The author of the novel of the same name. It's not called James Ellroy. It's called L.A. Confidential.
Right.
And the fact, you know, this is it. You know, it's great. I have not seen this film in a long time. I've not read an Ellroy in a long time. I know I've got you. I know we're doing L.A. Confidential.
Guy Pearce is in this film.
Yeah, phenomenal.
And Danny DeVito.
Rusty Crowe, mate.
Right, see, I have no memory of Rusty Crowe in this film at all.
This film.
Am I going to like it now, like 20 years later or whatever?
Do you know what? Do you know what this is?
What's this?
This is your Gladiator moment for me. This is it. This is happening.
This is your Gladiator.
This is my Gladiator.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've
yeah,
asked the question. Am I going to like this? Am I going to like this?
I won't tell you until the end of the episode. I promise. I promise I won't. I'm kind of excited. I'm not really because I never wanted to rewatch it, but I feel like I must have missed something. Having said that, I do hate Memento. So if you, the more you really like something, like there's different versions of it, right? Like if you really like a film, I'll be like, yeah, that must be a good film. But if you really like a film, sometimes that means I like it less than a film that you really like.
Well, I think the times we live in are very stressful, and people want to laugh. You know, they want to enjoy themselves, you know, forget their worries, and things are a little silly, you know.
We've mentioned this a little bit before, but we're going to take a quick break from recording these episodes while the European footy champs are happening and while we're catching up on some regular life stuff. But we've not left you with nothing, dear listener. We've recorded a special series of episodes that will release over the next 5 weeks. The first four of them are part of a series where Adam and I go through each year in the 21st century, and we both pick our favourite film from that year. It's called Pick One. Pick One.
It is called Pick One, and you have to play along.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, you play along, pick your favourite film of the year, and that's it.
That's it.
And this is the best. It's just your favorite film of a given year in the 21st century.
Absolutely.
And justify it. And also, I think, play along and send us what your full list is.
I like how you said those two things together. You said you spent ages laboriously telling the audience that there's no best ofs or anything. It's just your favorite film, and then justify it. You know,
justify it.
Very contradictory. anyway, that'll be happening for 4 weeks, and then the fifth week, a very special episode, or one to avoid. It's the Mission Impossible series franchise special episode, where I am, admittedly, in some of the film's cases for the first time, watching through all the Mission Impossible films, and Adam will be doing the same, although, of course, not for the first time. And we're going to talk about them and Tommy Cruise. And that'll be a special episode. Why? Because I just said it was. That's why. And it's being picked out of normal rotation. And after that, we'll come back with LA Confidential and begin Series 2.
Well, do you know why? Because Mission Impossible's... none of them have forgot you forgots.
Well, I don't want to give too much away, but I've already watched five of them. And whilst they do get better throughout, after starting to watch number four and then watching number five, I was like, oh, I've definitely seen both of those before, and I've forgotten everything.
Yeah, that's because you're a leaky bucket boy. The only one that's a forgot you forgot is number two, and I will only call the episode the Mission Impossible 2 episode.
And more chat and arbitrary rules like this in the fifth special episode of the summer of 2024. But anyway, listen, we'll be around. We'll be checking the emails. To be honest, we're really only taking a week or two off before we come back and start to record episodes for the next season again. So keep your emails coming in. They're very much appreciated. Tell a friend about this podcast, please. It's the best way for more people to find it if you just tell one friend and then force them to listen it, or watch them as they enter the passcode into their phone and then go in their phone and subscribe on their behalf. It isn't criminal if they want you to do it in the long run. I think this is episode 49. We're nearing a half century here. We've been gone for a year. Would you care to take a word, Adam?
Would I care to lay a cake a word?
No, I just meant this is nearly our year anniversary of releasing episodes, isn't it?
The words fail me how much this is meant to me.